Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. Hi, everybody. It's time for our annual audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It helps us understand our audience better, know what you like and don't like, how you listen to the show. It also helps us tell advertisers what kind of people listen. But I promise you, your feedback is always kept personally anonymous. All you have to do is visit twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. It'll just take a few minutes, and it'll help us make Twit even better. We really appreciate your support and any help you can give us. twit.tv/survey.
This episode of All That Android is brought to you by Automatic, the connected car company that improves your driving and integrates your car into your digital life. For more information, visit automatic.com/twit and enter the code TWIT to get 20% off your purchase. Hello and welcome to another episode of All About Android. This is episode 254, where your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell. Are you Ron Richards?
I am the Ron Richards.
The Ron
broadcasting live from New York City. So
did I ever tell you, Ron, that I listen to a lot of rock autobiographies and stuff, audiobooks and whatever. And the name Ron Richards comes up pretty regularly in the music industry world. Do you know of an alter ego Ron Richards that's worked with the likes of, like, I think the Beatles and stuff?
I'm not aware of that. I know that there's a politician somewhere. There's like a senator or a representative somewhere named Ron Richards. There's a comedian. But I'm not aware of anybody who worked in the music industry. That's interesting. I'll have to look into that.
British record producer, manager, and promoter best known for discovering the Hollies.
That was me.
That was you.
I discovered the Hollies. Oh. Yeah. Oh, I forgot. I've done so much of my career. I discovered the Hollies in 1962? What was that?
Yeah, you were an assistant to producer George Martin, so you're kind of a big deal.
Me and George go way back. I was actually at Abbey Road when they were recording it. It was amazing. It was great. I've been through a lot of places. So.
You worked with George Harris. I mean, I'm amazed that I know you, Ron. Whether you are this Ron or not. Welcoming back to the show, live and in person in the studio here, Matteo Doni. How are you doing, Matteo?
Very well, thanks. Thanks for having me back on the show.
Oh, absolutely. You told us that you were going to be in town, and no question. Anytime you're in town, let us know.
Thank you.
And you've got a spot at the table. Of course,
for
you're
sure.
Here with Skyscanner. Well, I don't know if you're here doing Skyscanner business, though. You're just traveling, right?
Yes, I'm technically on vacation. Okay. My better half and I came here for a half marathon in Vegas in the desert.
Mm-hmm.
And then we decided to come and do some wine and beer tasting here in Sonoma.
Ah! Sorry, I just hit my head on the TV.
Ow! Why'd you do that?
The thing is, like, I'm so tall that I'm so used to hitting my head on, like, doorways and stuff that, like, I could almost just pass it off like it's no big deal. Matteo,
you're too good to me.
Innis and Gunn. I think you brought this last time. I don't know if you have the over-the-shoulder shot. And this was really good beer.
Yes. Glad you enjoyed it.
It was really delicious. There you go. Innocent Gun, for those of you who want a new hard-to-find beer. I imagine this is pretty not easy to come by in the States.
It's quite difficult to find in the U.S., but in Canada it's very, very popular.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you for bringing this. And delicious treats for the kids, apparently.
Yes. Edinburgh Rocks.
I'm not sure I'm going to show those to them. Otherwise, that's all they're going to want to eat forever and ever. Yes. I will eventually, maybe Easter or something.
Hey, Jason.
Yeah.
Jason, save one of those bottles for me. I need a refill after last time. So.
Okay, I will. I'll save a couple for you. There's a lot in there. Thanks for that.
Yeah. Thank you, Matteo.
Awesome. Let's see here. We got a lot to talk about this week. If you hadn't heard, Mobile World Congress is happening, so we've got a number of hardware highlights from there. Another stab for messaging on Android. Kind of an interesting just direction, I suppose, alternative to SMS. What the Apple FBI backdoor case could mean for Android users, figure we could bat that around. Browsing the Play Store in MS-DOS, or kind of like you were on MS-DOS, and I'm not joking about that, and a whole lot more. Should we get to the heavy news right off the top?
I think so.
I think we should. Let's check out some news.
There might be more than one Ron Richards out there, but there's only one Android News.
Oh, so close.
Yeah. Okay. I stumbled over that one. That's it was okay. So good, you just couldn't get it out quick enough.
I know, but I appreciate the currency of it, the recency of it.
I was trying, but you said heavy news. I was like, oh, is there a new bumper for heavy news?
Well, I mean, this is kind of a heavy story, right? For almost, and by the way, you know, at this point, I feel like everybody's talked this thing to death, so we don't have to belabor it. But it is an interesting discussion around the topic of Android. For almost a week, the FBI and Apple have been standing off in a case surrounding kind of the encryption protecting data on a phone that belonged to one of the people who carried out San Bernardino terrorist attacks. The FBI has asked Apple to create a version of iOS that disables some security features on the phone to allow the FBI to more easily brute force their way past the PIN code that protects the device and gain access to the data within. Apple refuses to do so without significant basically, they're just pushing back a lot on this. And at least as far as Google is concerned, they side with Apple. Sundar Pichai said late last week that he agreed that the case is, quote, important, and hacking the device and data to allow for easier access could set a troubling precedent. Which is, I think it's kind of an understatement to say the least. But have you guys been following this? Where do you kind of stand on this? How do you feel about it?
It was funny. I think to put it in good perspective was that the day that Tim Cook's letter went up on the Apple website, I was talking to my sister who's a teacher, you know, lives in New York, you know, not very techie. And we're on the phone and she's like, oh, can you tell your friends down in Silicon Valley not to protect terrorists? And I kind of paused and I was like, what are you talking about? And she's like, oh, this whole Apple thing. Why doesn't Apple just give the FBI whatever they need? And I was like, oh, the rest of the world doesn't understand this at all. And I tried to explain to her the implications of what this means, and that it's more than just Apple giving the FBI data, that it's potentially creating a backdoor for anyone with an iPhone to give anything they want to the government, which is not a freedom I would want to give up, you know, like a freedom I would want to lose. And so, yeah, it's a complicated, complicated topic.
So we actually got an email from Kevin from Kansas to kind of frame this in an Android way. We've already had one person leave chat, quit because why are we talking about this on an Android show? The reason we're talking about this is because it has widespread implications that absolutely affect all, well, I think security in general on the internet and on devices, not even just smartphones, but, you know, it could potentially affect encryption and a whole lot of other things. Kevin from Kansas says, let's see here. With all the news about Apple and the iPhone encryption these last few weeks, where does Android fall on the spectrum? I have a Nexus 6 with the latest February security update applied. I have a PIN code on my lock screen. It's required on restart. How encrypted, in air quotes, is Android Marshmallow if compelled by a court order? Can Google reset a PIN code and decrypt and fully patched Nexus phone? And I think the answer there is a little complicated. I mean, it's kind of different scenarios, but as far as Android is concerned, there are a number of things to look at. Bootloader exploits absolutely exist. And, you know, if you've got an open bootloader, like...
You're starting from the bottom, so anyone can slip in underneath and then get the data sitting up higher up.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the initial one. So if you have an OEM unlocked device, such as a Nexus device, and you've unlocked it to flash your own custom ROM, maybe want to lock that when not in use.
Yeah, right.
And that's an option. It's as easy as unlocking it on a Nexus device. It's OEM, fastboot OEM, lock and unlock.
Probably the most secure that your Android device could be in this regard is locked bootloader, unrooted, which, I mean, they kind of, you know, some often go hand in hand there. No USB debugging set to on, right? Because if that's on, you have like USB access in different ways. Full disk encryption activated. And all those things together are going to more or less, at least on a stock device like the 6P, protect you to a certain degree. With all those things set that way, is there a way for, let's say, because Android's open source, so anyone can create a version of the OS that, let's say, has this kind of channel, you know, some way of accessing. Can that be flashed if all these things are set that way?
I'm not going to say it's impossible, because I'm sure that with the right amount of resources in terms of computing power and hardware, it would technically be possible. Is it worth someone engaging in that effort? Well, it's down to the people trying to do it to decide. It's a difficult one. But if you have all those precautions you've just listed, Jason, it should be relatively secure and very difficult to get into.
Yeah.
Unless Google have a secret backdoor no one's ever seen. But then again, Android's in its AOSP form. Anyone can look at the code. Anyone can see if there is an exploit there to be had. So that's a big question mark.
Sure.
But then again, with more eyes looking at the Android open source project, we should be able to see the exploits before they're usable.
Right, the fact that it's open source versus closed. The Apple platform is very different from Android in that regard. So there we go.
So it's potentially more secure, potentially more dangerous. We can't say for now.
Yeah. Don't want to belabor the story because I know people, you know, get a little iffy when we talk about Apple on this show. But like I said, this extends beyond potentially, and I think it's actually a pretty important story. What do you think, Ron?
It absolutely is. I mean, it's something that we got to watch and see how it plays out, because the ramifications could affect all devices, not just Apple devices. So we'll see. But for what it's worth, I agree with Tim Cook and I agree with Sundar Pichai, and hopefully they can find a solution, or Robert McAfee finds a solution for us.
All right. Moving onward to other things that are directly Android related.
Yeah, talk about super directly Android-related. Yeah. So our friends over at Cyanogen are gearing up for their big marshmallow release of CyanogenOS. Now, this is not to be confused with CyanogenMod, which is the open-source version of Android running CyanogenMod. Rather, this is CyanogenOS, right? They're branded OS that they're producing. And specifically within CyanogenOS, the mods platform. Microsoft is actively involved out of the gate. They're building Skype, Cortana, OneNote, and Hyperlapse into the mods platform. And what this is going to allow CyanogenOS to be deeply integrated with other app developers. So you could, you know, modify your dialer so it integrates Skype or Truecaller. Or you can, you know, deeply integrate Cortana so that it gives voice commands embedded to the OS. There's going to be a social lock screen replacement. And ultimately, you know, CyanogenOS 13 with this mod platform is going to be a way for developers to deeply integrate with their apps within the OS, which, interestingly enough, is kind of the opposite of what Google's been doing with the current status of Android. They're doing their best to break them out. So it's really interesting to see the direction that Cyanogen is taking, and it's, you know, we were seeing that investment that Microsoft has made in Cyanogen come to pass by a deeper integration.
CEO of Cyanogen, Kurt McMaster, who is very outspoken. You remember it was like last January, where he said he wanted to take Android away from Google. And part of the reasoning, part of what he was talking about there is building in functionality that we're used to Google rolling out, because they have control of their platform to a certain degree, and doing that on their own. I don't know. This is kind of, you know, obviously a big example of that. This is certainly the direction that they're headed. What do you think? Is this a successful direction for CyanogenMod?
I think it's potentially very successful. So there has been demands outside the core fan base of the Nexus program and the stock Android program of an alternative, competitor Android-based system. Amazon, in a way, tried with their own Fire phones and tablets. The tablets have been relatively successful, but the phones were a bit of a flop.
A bit of a flop is underselling it. That was a big flop.
I think that it's a welcome thing. It's a good thing to have a slightly different platform with tighter integrations with services other than Google's. It also, if they have a separate app store, which is gains trust and creates a bit of competition in the marketplace in the apps distribution system, that would also be a good one. If you look at Asia, if you look at specifically China, where Google don't officially operate, there's a very rich ecosystem of app stores and distribution channels, and each phone manufacturer and ROM developer has their own set of tightly integrated APIs with service providers. Mm-hmm. So companies other than Google, such as Baidu, the WeChat Messenger service, and others. So I think that for Western markets to move closer to that model will make it slightly more complex, but potentially better for users. Prices will go down. If users prefer Skype to maybe Hangouts, they'll get a better service on their devices.
Will the Western market be welcoming to kind of the alternative? Or do you think people just kind of don't care, like, or don't know? They aren't necessarily aware of the fact that Cyanogen's here, and it's not, you know, Google out of the box necessarily. It's Cyanogen.
Well, for some people, they don't really care. Yeah. They don't buy a phone because it's Android. They buy a phone because it's a phone.
Right. Or because it's Samsung. You know,
exactly. Like, they'll use whatever is pre-installed on the device.
Sure.
Look at Samsung users using the Samsung App Store. Mm-hmm. It's not widely considered the main App Store, but in some places around the world, it's what people use more than Google Play or any other App Store because it's the default one on the phone.
Right.
They trust Samsung more than others.
Hmm.
So whoever makes your phone, if you've bought a phone, you might trust whoever makes it to give you good apps,
yeah,
or good services.
Yeah, fair enough.
So I welcome this move from Cyanogen. I think it's a good thing. And also it brings on the competition heat to Google.
For sure.
Yeah, I agree with Matteo 100%. I think that competition is good. I think choice is good. I think the whole dream of the Android platform that we embraced when it came out was the openness aspect of it. And so I think it's great to see, you know, Cyanogen pushing the limits of what that means and allowing, you know, Microsoft to support that. And, you know, we talked last week about the great work Microsoft's been doing on their apps. It's an option. I like seeing that as an option for consumers.
Yep.
Ultimately, if improvements get made, Google may take notice of it and integrate them into their own systems and their own services.
That's true. They are no strangers to doing that. Yeah. When they see something they like and just kind of incorporating it eventually.
Especially with Cyanogen.
Yeah, well, yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. After 10 years, the GSMA, it's a global consortium of carriers, about 800 of them, finally has a big partner to bring support for RCS. What is RCS? It's Rich Communication Services. And that is, of course, Google is the partner here. Google first announced that it would actively work to support RCS as an evolution for SMS when it acquired Jibe Mobile last year. And basically what RCS is it's a replacement option for SMS. It's actually backwards compatible with SMS and MMS, but it also includes, you know, other features that people are used to seeing in, like, data messaging services that we use, like group chat, high-res auto sharing, read receipts, that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I don't know. Are messaging apps a better way to do this? Or or is it too, you know, I guess, like, is this too late?
No, this isn't too late. I was literally just having this conversation today about how much I hate SMS and I hate MMS, and I that's why I prefer apps like Telegram, my app that I had in the arena last mm-hmm. week, and WhatsApp, and ultimately email. Like, I think there are so many points of failure and problems with SMS that it's an antiquated platform. And I know I mispronounced that, but it's an old platform. And you know, we've got to evolve. And, like, so it's funny because one of the developers I work with at my day job shared in Slack when the new Jibe site came out. It's at jibe.google.com. And Brian, I put the link in the doc to take a look at it. And we were kind of talking about what it could mean for, you know, for app development and all this sort of stuff. And it's just great to see Google embracing this. And hopefully this is a big step that will, you know, get everyone in a direction to move beyond SMS. Because if you ask me, SMS is dead. It should be dead. Hmm. You know?
What do you got there?
Yeah. So I was just looking at it. If this makes it easier to have maybe a smaller selection of apps for messaging, I have a
right.
folder
oh, geez.
Of different apps for messaging different
deal.
People
yeah.
in different places. It includes Telegram, WhatsApp,
yeah, 11
Skype,
of them.
Yep. Skype for Business, Slack. It gets quite complicated. So if it's anything that can reduce those number of apps and maybe be a cross-platform one where everyone speaks to each other nicely.
Well, when you consider Android phones are somewhere around 80% worldwide, you know, of devices out there. If this is built into Android OS and it's backwards compatible with SMS and MMS, then you kind of get the best of all worlds. iMessage, by the way, does not support RCS. So this would...
Shocking.
Yeah. So in this case, it's kind of like an Android, you know, slash Google only thing. Yeah. Interesting. I think it sounds like a good... They've been working on this for 10 years. So that's just kind of crazy, like that they've been working on this next evolution to SMS for that long and finally have this kind of a partner. I just wonder when we're going to see the actual kind of real world kind of results.
It could be a few years yet. Yeah. The network operators might be slightly against this because they won't be able to charge you an arm and a leg for literally bytes of data, which are text messages. That's an enormous revenue driver for the mobile phone networks.
Yes, it is.
And they might be against this. Also, they're GSMA partners as well, in most cases.
All right, so before we get to all the Mobile World Congress hardware stuff, and we've got a lot of it, let's take a minute to thank the sponsor of today's episode, and that's Automatic. Chances are your car hasn't fully kept up with technology. That's where Automatic comes in. You can see it right here. It's this little thing that you plug into your car. This is a small adapter. Turns any car into a connected car. You just plug this into the same port that your mechanic uses to diagnose engine problems, and it opens up a ton of possibilities. I've got it right here. I'll go ahead and pull it out so you can kind of see it. Automatic lets you keep track of your fuel mileage, your vehicle health. You can expense business trips with a tap, link your car to the connected devices that power your life. You know, what does the check engine light actually mean? Automatic will tell you before you go into the shop. And Automatic can also integrate with things like your Nest thermostat to know when you're home, and it can provide, you know, the answer to a question we commonly have, which is, where on earth did I park my car? I can't find it. Well, you know, this kind of sends that message back to the app that's installed on your device and makes it very easy. I've been using it. It tracks all of the different points for you of where you go and how long those trips are and how much gas is estimated that cost in order to do that. And that can be really eye-opening. You realize that a quick trip to the corner store actually costs $1.25 each way. And you're like, wow, I never thought of it like that before. Maybe I don't need to go to the corner store. Works on nearly every car made after 1996. Takes minutes to install. Literally, you just kind of plug it right in. It connects to your iPhone and Android device over Bluetooth. So you hear a little chirp when you get in the car and it connects. You get real-time performance data. Uses intelligent coaching to maximize your fuel economy and reduce wear and tear. So it'll kind of alert you when you're, let's say, accelerating too fast or applying the brakes, just so that you know and you can be aware and maybe change your driving habits and hopefully shave some, improve your gas efficiency that way. Gives a plain English explanation for the check engine light. Automatic's app platform actually integrates, like I said, with Nest, but also your mechanic, FreshBooks, and a whole bunch of other services. It actually works with If This Then That for even more possibilities, so you can integrate your car into your digital life in really interesting ways. There's support for Apple Watch, for Pebble, and there's no monthly fees or subscriptions required, and Automatic will never sell your data. Now, Automatic is normally $99.95. When you use our special offer code, TWIT, you'll save 20%. Go to automatic.com/TWIT for more information and to purchase. And use offer code TWIT to save 20% off the regular purchase price. That's automatic.com/TWIT. And we thank them for their support. All right. Speaking of interesting hardware, we've got a lot to take a look at in this week's hardware roundup of Mobile World Congress.
Oh, this is it. This is like the Super Bowl,
this is
right?
It.
This is our, yeah.
This it's
is,
one
this
of our is, Super Bowls.
Brace.
Honestly, I think it's bigger than CES at this point. I think that this is it's like this and Google I.O. I think are our two big tentpole events of the year.
Yeah.
But so this past Sunday, I had the lovely opportunity to spend some time with Jason and Leo as we covered the Samsung Unpacked event from Barcelona. Mm-hmm. And in addition to seeing Mark Zuckerberg babble on for about 10 minutes, We saw the official release of the Samsung Galaxy S7 and S7 Edge. And this is pretty interesting because, you know, as we saw some of the stuff that got leaked, we saw what was confirmed, what was real. We saw Samsung take the Galaxy, S7 and S7 Edge and improve upon the 6 version by listening to their consumers and hearing what they want. So what we're seeing is we're seeing a better battery, better camera, specifically in low light performance, which we'll get into in a moment, bringing back a micro SD slot. And bringing back the water and dust protection, the IP68 rating.
Yeah, port plugs. That's awesome.
Port plugs. Yeah. So to get into the details of this, they've iterated on the design. It's a tighter design. Honestly, I was looking at the photos after the event, Jason, and I do like that. These are the iteration. It's getting better.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as just rote as the previous phones were, as I claim they were. The phones have a Snapdragon 820 processor, 4 gig of RAM. They've got a 5.1 inch and a 5.5 inch display, which I like those sizes. I was talking to somebody on Twitter about that, and you know, I'm not a big fan of the huge phones, and I think that the 5.1 and 5.5 are good options. As I mentioned, they re-added the micro SD slot. They've got the IP68 rated water and dust resistance, and they showed it in the presentation that there are no port covers because what they're doing is it's how they're sealing the electronics inside the device. Mm-hmm. So beyond where you plug in the cable, beyond that is where the seal is happening, which is really like a really kind of smart design. They've got a non-removable 3,000 and 3,600 milliamp batteries in each, respectively, in each phone, which is a long battery life. 12 megapixel camera with a f1.7 aperture, which allows for that great low light performance. They announced a new heat pipe cooling system for the CPU to keep the phone not so hot, which has echoes of the old gaming PCs with their liquid cooling. And a big thing that we were surprised about, no USB-C. So still standard USB plugs that we're used to, no USB-C yet. So, Matteo, what did you think of these phones when they were announced?
I was pleasantly impressed. I was saddened when the S6 was launched because of the lack of micro SD support.
A lot of people were.
I think that's a big, big selling point for a lot of phones in a lot of markets. Mm. Not everyone has constant access to data. It's difficult to achieve that, even here in the US.
Mm-hmm.
So having that micro SD slot for media, for content, is essential.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'm very happy about that. If they've refined on the design of the device and made it waterproof, even better.
Yeah.
So I think I'm now happier with Samsung than I was this time last year. If you look at it over the course of the last 4 years, Samsung have been releasing new designs and then improving on them with waterproof and improved specs overall. Mm-hmm. So the Samsung Galaxy S4, and then we had the S5, which was waterproof and overall improved, but much the same.
Interesting, yeah.
Then we have the S6, and now they've made it better.
Mm-hmm.
So
you're saying next year it's going to be
something completely
totally different.
The best Samsung Galaxy S ever.
Without a micro SD card slot, or without waterproofing,
without some,
and then the next year they'll bring in the SD card slot and the waterproofing. Yeah. So actually, if you go back to the Brian, if you go back to the link, the Fandroid.com link about the shootout. So basically, they did a side by side. This is regarding the camera, the Galaxy S7 compared to the iPhone 6S and the Galaxy S6. So you see the example and you're like, well, of course, I've seen a million of these. It looks really great. But if you watch the video, you kind of see just how low light that scenario actually was. And if you skip back a little bit, you'll see. Yeah. So you can see kind of in the background where she is. Skip back just a tiny bit and you can actually see the set when they walk in. They'll kind of pan up. So they're going to walk in and they'll see the lady and you'll see you can see back there, like there's hardly any light, super low light, like it's really dim back there. And they take these pictures side by side with the three cameras, and the S7 just kind of blows everything else away in real time based on this F1.7 aperture, which I think it's pretty darn impressive.
It was really impressive, and they highlighting the low light environment, which is really the area where cell phone cameras suffer. Is that I know it when I'm in dark clubs and I want to take pictures of bands. I mean, everybody's seen my grainy photos on Google Plus, right? I mean, having strong low light performances is becoming the holy grail for phone cameras, and so it's interesting to see them kind of really tackle that. It looks like they've achieved it.
Yeah, and so, I'm looking at the resulting picture kind of a little bit larger and expecting to see grain. It's not, and mind you, there's software enhancements going on in here. This isn't like, raw camera footage or anything. But still, they've cool done stuff. A lot with these devices to kind of like bring meaningful features, let's say. And they spent hardly any time talking about software.
Which was so unlike Samsung, considering previously it was all about their platform and all that sort of stuff. They did spend a lot of time talking about building Samsung as a Samsung services and products and partnerships, as they're really positioning themselves to be a true competitor to Apple, which I thought was really, really interesting. Mm-hmm. It's more than just phones. It's a whole ecosystem that you're buying into. Some other interesting notes from the presentation, though. If you pre-order a Samsung Galaxy S7 Edge, they're giving away Samsung Gear VR goggles. So big push on Gear VR and virtual reality. In fact, that's why Mark Zuckerberg showed up and talked about Facebook's and Oculus's commitment to VR and their partnership with Samsung. And that all teed up to the announcement of a new product called the Samsung Gear 360, which is a lightweight camera for capturing 360-degree photos and videos. It looks like an old mid-2000s webcam, which I love.
It really
but
does.
It's a neat little camera that's got 30 megapixels across the two lenses on either side. And it's made to be durable. It's made to be out in the field. It's splash and dust proof. It's got a little half-inch PMOLED OLED display on the top of it so you can control it. And in the demo, it shows people, putting the camera right in front of them and live streaming to somebody back at home with the Gear VR goggles on. This could be a huge release. It's supposed to ship in Q2. We don't know the price yet. I think that's going to be the real determiner as to how much penetration it gets. Also, like a little bum that that's going to be like it's part of the Galaxy ecosystem. So if you don't have a Samsung Galaxy phone or Gear VR, it won't work. But we'll see how that goes. I imagine give some people a couple of weeks with it, and they could probably unlock it. But
yeah,
hopefully.
Who knows?
Samsung's it's a neat product, right?
Yeah, Samsung's pretty good at locking down their devices these days. So with Knox and everything.
Then again, the Samsung Gear S2. Is now compatible with devices other than Samsung.
Yeah,
ones.
That's a good point. That's
if they do want to sell at scale, they might want to open that up going forward. But I think this is a good thing for VR in general, not just for Samsung, because this is a way of creating content that undoubtedly will be shareable on Google Plus,
Twitter,
or any social network.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, Facebook themselves.
Facebook, yeah.
So more people creating content is only a good thing for the VR ecosystem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's the kind of thing where if this camera is something that if they're able to get it to a price point of sub $400 or whatever the magic price point is, wouldn't you want people creating that content and really embracing VR as opposed to having it just be like, well, you need to have a Galaxy phone?
Yeah,
That's what I want to see how that plays out.
I'll be picking up the S7. I tried to pre-order today, and I could not find like a pre-order for the unlocked version. So anyways, I got to keep looking at it, but I want to do that and get the Gear VR.
Does it ship March 11th? Is that the
March 11th, I believe, is kind That's of soon. The date. Very soon. Pre-orders open now. LG also made an early splash at Mobile World Congress before Samsung had a chance to come along with Zuckerberg and swoop all the attention away. The LG G5 is dramatically redesigned, has a modular design for additional functionality. And we'll talk about that in a second. Volume buttons are actually relocated from the back, which I never really cared for the volume buttons on the back, so I'm happy to see this. I've gotten very used to the fingerprint sensor on the back, though, and that they have that. They've basically taken some of the lessons they've learned from the Nexus 5X and employed them here.
And the design is slightly reminiscent of the Nexus 5X mm-hmm. with the fingerprint scanner and the camera slightly raised.
Dual cameras, right?
They've improved on the cameras in a very different way, but the overall design of the back reminds me of.
Oh, it totally does. It totally does with the, yeah, the kind of the popping out slightly, like you said, the fingerprint. The dual cameras, by the way, so that's not for necessarily for the kind of shifting perspective effects that we are used to seeing dual cameras in phones over the last couple of years, although they did mention that they might include that somewhere down the line. But it's basically one camera, which is kind of the normal perspective, and another that's more of a wide-angled kind of camera, so you have the option on back. So, okay.
Lots of panoramas on Google Plus.
Yeah, apparently. but I don't know. I mean, I'm pretty impressed with the G5 and everything we saw. USB-C, 5.3-inch display, by the way. As far as those modules, the modular design, you can plug into a special port on the bottom, things like a removable battery, an interchangeable removable battery behind. But the interchangeable modular design for things like a camera expansion for holding with a separate shutter button, or high-res audio is another one. I'm not sure how successful that aspect is going to be, but
I love the name they chose for those attachments.
What is
Friends?
It? Oh, Friends, that's right.
What a friendly name to choose.
They all danced in a fountain.
Oh, in slow motion.
In London.
Yeah.
But hopefully they'll open up those ports so that third-party developers can make Friends.
Yeah, you hope so.
So someone like our sponsor of today's episode would be able to have a plug-in to the phone.
Oh, sure. Sure, anyone could. Up. Yeah, but I guess they'd have to... I guess they'd have to prove that people actually want, and are willing to pay for those modules. And I don't know if we're there at the point to where the average consumer in great numbers is going to be like totally wanting to get in on the modular connection thing. But I love to see the different changes. And by the way, Google, is no stranger to this idea. They've got Project Aura, and they seem to think that that's going to be a success whenever it happens to roll out. So I don't know. Maybe we're missing something. but LG also has their own VR and 360 thing. They've got the LG 360 Cam with two 14-megapixel sensors on it. You can share to YouTube and Street View with that. And then the LG VR headset, which is foldable, and it attaches to the phone via USB-C. So you're not putting the phone in front of your eyes. It's actually an external thing that has the plug up, and it looks something like that.
But that's good that they're all in on USB-C by the sounds of it.
Not Samsung,
yeah. But LG is.
LG and is, yeah. They started that with the 5X, so it's like, okay, well, let's continue that. That makes sense. So, yeah, very cool. And I can't wait to get one of the G5s in to play around with it. We'll show it off on the show for sure.
Excellent. All right, so moving on into the Mobile World Congress parade continues to roll on, and Sony didn't want to be left out. So Sony showed off their new line of Xperia devices that are replacing the Z series, and this new series, I'm going to wait for it, the X series.
Oh,
there you go.
So no more Z, now it's the X.
No more Z, now it's the X. They're moving backwards in the alphabet, and it's a little redundant or bookended, Xperia X. It both starts and ends with an X. I don't know if they're going to do anything with that. But they announced the Xperia X is a 5-inch 1080p display with front-facing speakers, Snapdragon 650, 3 gigabyte memory, 3 gigabyte RAM, 32 and 64 gig storage, micro SD card, 23-megapixel rear-facing camera, and a 2620 milliamp battery, the slide fingerprint sensor, and it's shipping with Marshmallow. So pretty solid phone. It's packed in a small package there.
Yeah. It follows Sony's kind of like design language that we're used to seeing, but they've really kind of contoured and rounded things even a little bit more on the sides, I think. Yeah.
And I'm sure that our good friend Florence Ion appreciates the array of colors, including what looks like rose gold or some sort of pink metallic color that's in there with the new line. So is that what they call rose gold these days? Is that what that is?
I mean, that looks rose gold to my eyes, but I don't know if they're going to call it outright rose gold. Yeah. They probably have some fancy name for it.
I'm guessing lychee skin or something like that.
Yeah, lychee skin. Yeah. Our new lychee skin.
Well done, Matteo. Well done. So they also announced the Xperia X Performance is the X with souped up features like the Snapdragon 820 and with a brushed metal backplate. which is gives you a little more edge there for your back plate. And they showed off some new accessory devices like the Xperia Ear, which receives voice commands for things like checking your calendar schedule or checking on the weather. The Xperia Eye, which is the wearable 360-degree lens. Xperia Projector, which allows typing on any surface, which I love this technology and I think it's so cool. And the Xperia Agent, which is kind of like the Amazon Echo with a built-in camera and projector. So it looks like Sony is stepping up with all the wearables and tech devices and all the kind of building that Xperia environment. You got your Xperia X in your pocket, your Xperia I on your head, and you know, and your Xperia Agent in your house. It's all coming together.
We're seeing the theme between these three major announcements is like accessories. Yeah. It's like a big play in accessories, be it VR goggles, be it you know, a little thing you put in your ear or whatever. And in some ways, it seems to overshadow the phone, which is very interesting because we know that the phone sales are slowing, and we also know that it's hard to innovate on phones at this point. They've been developed to a certain point where almost all phones have almost all features that people are looking for, at least in one way or another. And so it's hard to stand out. So now it's this interconnected, you know, Internet of Things / you know, whatever accessory market that's starting to be played in a big way.
Well, the value add proposition now is the ecosystem of accessories, software, mm-hmm. and ultimately the margins on the handsets themselves must be very low. Mm-hmm. So where the three big manufacturers that launched their devices at the beginning of the week or end of last week want to make their money is on the accessories and convince people that they're good accessories and that they really want them.
Yeah, that, I suppose, is the challenge.
I think HTC was ahead of its time last year with the HTC Re.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And they made an attempt at that. Hopefully they have something else up their sleeve coming soon.
Yeah, right. The Re really was ahead of the curve as far as that's concerned. Speaking of HTC.
Wait, before we move on. I know that was a great segue to HTC, but before we move on, I put a link in the doc to hands-on with the Xperia Projector, which is something of all of these announcements, I think, you know, the Agent being an Echo-like device is cool, and the Eye and wearable 360s is cool, and the Ear, whatever. But this projector is the closest thing to, like, the future, you know, like we're talking about that innovation by having this little box on your table that is projecting an interactive tabletop. Like, that's the next step. That's the cool stuff. Like, once this stuff gets integrated into our phones and we're able to, you know, kind of like if anybody watched The Expanse on Sci-Fi, it was this whole kind of, you know, interactive, like, on-the-wall kind of experience where you can interact with the screen that's being displayed from the device. This is really cool. Like, I want to see this developed.
This is great. And just another way to get cat pictures into PowerPoint presentations at work.
On your table. Instead of just the wall, we bring cat pictures to your table. Cool.
Sign me up for this. I'm really curious about this.
Although I will say the whole typing on a virtual keyboard that's projected onto a table doesn't. Yeah. It just, man. Maybe it's the kind of thing that you have to do it for a long time to really get used to it and everything. But I've tried it and it was.
Well, thing is, it's got to work. It's like I remember going. I remember visiting Microsoft's campus up in Redmond back in like 2005 or 2006 and seeing that first Surface. Do you remember the very first Microsoft Surfaces, which were the big tables? Mm-hmm. Then they put them in hotels and things like that.
Yep.
And there was lag. It wasn't very responsive. Like, it's got to be tight and it's got to work. And once we get that technology to the point where it does, then we're never going to look back. I never want to touch on a physical keyboard again. So
Another interesting thing about Sony was that their two top devices are running Qualcomm chipsets, whereas their budget offering that they announced at MWC is actually running a MediaTek chipset, just at a time when a lot of the other OEMs are moving away from MediaTek to Qualcomm.
Mm-hmm.
Sony are starting to use MediaTek chipsets in the more affordable of the three.
Yeah, interesting. So speaking of more affordable then, I won't take the HTC segue. I'll take the affordable segue.
Go for it.
Wait a minute. There is no such thing as an affordable segue. That's a different segue. Anyways.
It's a Xiaomi one.
Yes, it's a hoverboard. It's an affordable segue. You can't even get those anymore because they're not allowed to sell them on Amazon. Anyways, HTC unveiled a few new mid-range Desire devices. So we're not getting the higher-end HTC devices. Man, that was a lot of tangents. at a global release of the One X9, this was a device that was initially released only for the Asian market. Now they're opening it up. Similar to the One A9, it has a metal body, 5.5-inch 1080p display, 13-megapixel rear-facing camera with optical image stabilization, boom sound speakers on the front, 3,000 milliamp-hour battery, dual SIM, no fingerprint sensor. So HTC not necessarily showing off, you know, whiz-bang high-end stuff, but a decent, you know, line of Desire devices. And then we've got this One X9. So
those devices have a very funky design on the back of them. Or was it the Desire ones with the...
The Desire ones.
Individually spray-painted backs
mm-hmm.
with splotches of gold and silver on them.
Here, I'll see if I can get a link into the doc. For some reason, I did not include
it.
Yeah.
It's definitely something
speckled?
Different.
A speckled kind of spray painty look. There we go. I put in the link for you, Brian. A micro splash of color, as The Verge is saying.
Micro splash.
It's yeah. different. It's something that we
it
haven't seen.
It kind of makes
before.
It look dirty, though.
Yes, it looks it does, as if they've been doing DIY and left it out whilst they're painting.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. I got this effect on my sweatshirt when I sprayed when I did a paint sprayer in our house. So
I got that effect on my shirt after an Italian pasta with sauce meal that splashed. There you go.
Right, Ron, you're in New York and you spend a lot of time in San Francisco. In the hipster factor, is this a hipster phone with that particular design on the back?
I don't know. I am not a hipster, so I can't tell. I'm a little too old for that. We'll have to go to Dolores Park and ask some people what they think.
Dolores Park is upset with you right now, Ron.
Yeah, I'm sure they are. Yeah. I'm not worried.
They had these phones before you did.
I'll go back to Molotovs and just to make fun of them. So, oh, look at that blue one. Look at that Robin, that Nexbit Robin Midnight Blue and the mint kind of combo. Yeah.
Totally, it does. It's a similar color scheme.
Interesting.
Apologies to the audio readers.
That's right. They're used to this, I think. We have our show notes at twit.tv/AAA. So you can go there and you can check out all the things we talk about and all the links. We also happen to have a video product. If you want to watch it, you can go to YouTube or go to our site and find it there to see what you're missing out on. In fact, you should do that. HTC also announced the price for the HTC Vive. It's not Android, but I'm excited about this. $799. $799 for the HTC Vive VR headset. Anyone else in it? Who's coming with me?
It's competitive with Oculus, so yeah. I mean, that's about right.
Yeah, it's a little bit more expensive than the Oculus by a couple hundred dollars, but you know, early adopter price, I think. That's kind of where we're at with that.
I'm very tempted. Yeah. I tried the HTC Vive at the Big Android Barbecue in Amsterdam last year. Great products. It seems to be very, very responsive compared to the previous version of Oculus.
So you played around with the Vive. And what was the one kind of takeaway, like, wow, that was actually a really cool thing from the Vive?
I think it's the overall interaction and the lack of lag.
I've
been seasick or I've had motion sickness from other VR products.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have it from the Vive, which is...
Oh, interesting. Oh, I can't wait to play around with this stuff. I'm really getting excited about VR. Okay, so we're running a little long, but you brought in some interesting hardware. So let's spend like 5 minutes just kind of taking a look real quick at some of the cool things that you brought in, Matteo.
Great.
What you got there?
Thanks, Ron. So Jason, I've brought two
You're
wonderful
welcome.
Devices. So they're both by Chinese OEMs, device manufacturers. This is the first Huawei device sold under the Honor brand in the U.S., so I was recently at the Honor product launch for Europe of the Honor 5X, which is also available in the US for $199. And it's a mid-range smartphone running EMUI, which is Huawei's version of Android based on Android 5.1. And a lot of the hardware components are very similar to the higher-end Honor 7. So you have very nice full high-definition screen, which is a 5.5-inch unit. So it's not a full-on phablet, but getting there.
Mm-hmm.
It's full high-definition, great viewing angles. It's a full metal body. It has a 13-megapixel camera on the back, 5-megapixel selfie camera. And the fingerprint scanner on the back is very similar to the one on the Nexus 6P and the Nexus 5X. So it's very, very fast.
Oh, okay.
The difference being that working with Samsung software, not only is it fast at unlocking, it can be used for gestures. So by swiping down on the on the sensor, you bring down your notification panel. Okay. So it's difficult to show this on the two sides, but when I swipe down on the sensor, it will bring down my notification panel.
Oh, interesting.
If I swipe up, it will close the notification panel, and if I do it again, it should open my multitasking. And then in the web browser, I can use left and right to browse back and forward. So it's more than the Nexus experience. Huawei have integrated that tightly with the rest of the operating system.
The actions, like, have you gotten used to using the actions? I'm not sure how much I'd really use those, to be honest.
The notification panel, when using the phone one-handed, is very useful. So rather than taking the phone out and then having to use the other hand to pull down your notification drawer, you can just do it with the one hand on the fingerprint sensor. So that's useful because it's one of the most used things I have on Android, is those notifications.
Sure.
This is powered by a Qualcomm chipset as well. It's the Snapdragon 616. It's very, very power efficient, has a great battery life, so it gets me through a day.
Sorry, thumbing my way through it.
Okay, it's not a bad looking display.
And it comes with a screen protector already on it. I haven't actually taken it off.
Oh, I see. Yeah, you can kind of see here. I'll see if I can get the light to kind of glance off it a little bit.
But even with that on it, the screen is lovely. Very, very nice.
Yeah.
So for consuming media, for using it as a camera, it's good.
And this is how much again? $200,
you said? It's $199 here in the US. Prices vary in Europe, but it bounces around £189 to £169, depending on where you purchase it from.
Interesting.
And overall, for the price, you're getting a lot of smartphone. It's difficult to beat in that price.
Yeah, I mean, that you always kind of have to point that out when you're talking about, you know, like a $200 unlocked. It just goes to show you how much that low price gets you nowadays. Like, it doesn't give you this tiny little piece of plastic that, you know, you don't care about. You know what I mean? Like, it actually feels like a nice device. It's got a nice display and reasonable specs in there. So for $200, it's pretty great.
It's also dual SIM, so it takes two SIM cards and a micro SD. So it's 16 gig built in, and it can take up to 128 gigabyte micro SD cards.
Nice.
So great overall specs for the price. And that's officially available in most Western markets under the Honor branding.
Okay.
So that was the first of the devices I brought.
Now, this next one I'm very curious about. Yes.
We
talked about this.
You can't get as easily in Western markets. You need to import it through a trusted retailer or go to AliExpress, the Chinese equivalent of eBay and Amazon combined.
Mm-hmm.
So AliExpress is where I ordered the device from. It took a few days to arrive. But it's a 5-inch device, so smaller than the Honor device. And it has specs similar to in terms of size, to the Moto G third generation. So it's a 720p 5-inch screen. The difference being that this is running a Snapdragon 616 processor, so the same processor as in the Honor 5X.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very power-efficient chipset. But they've put a massive 4,100 milliamp hour battery in the back of it. So 720p screen, Snapdragon 616, and the big battery overall gives me 2 to 3 days battery life.
Dang.
And that's saying a lot.
That's awesome. Yeah.
The downside is that out of the box, there are no Google services whatsoever on the Xiaomi device.
Mm-hmm.
There are relatively simple instructions on various forums on how to add those. But for the price, which I believe is around about $160, you're getting a lot of smartphone again. 13-megapixel camera, 16 gigabytes of storage built-in, expandable with microSD, dual SIM.
Take a look at that.
And it's finished very, very well.
Yeah, it's got a nice finish to it. It feels nice.
Ooh,
very premium feel.
Yeah. Very interesting. But, and this one's how much again?
Once I'd paid customs and everything, it was £130. So it'll be in the same price range.
About $200.
About $200.
Yeah.
But you're getting...
I got a quick question, Mateo. Sorry to interrupt.
Go ahead.
Can you get that phone with a Mocha Dial backing or no?
Not yet. So Mocha Dial is
good question, Ron.
It's a very good question. So Mocha Dial is an aftermarket edition. This phone is so new, it's so hipster, that you can't get Mocha Dial yet.
I'm surprised Mocha Dial wasn't a launch option.
But yeah. I know you were after Mocha Dial, so I brought this. Brian, if you can switch over. So this is the case to my Honor 6.
Which is my God.
Real leather Mocha Dial.
Spit take.
Wow.
It's beautiful. So this is real leather made to look like Mocha Dial.
So wait a minute. So it's real leather made to look like fake crocodile skin.
Yes.
Okay, just want to be clear on that. All right, that's good. I love
this. This is like Inception of cases. Interesting. It's interesting that this is your thing.
Someone in Europe has to bring this beauty to the Western markets,
and then they have to, apologize profusely for it. Sorry,
hey, I'm Italian. I know fashion.
All right, you keep telling yourself that, Mateo. I love it. I'm guaranteed to see Mocha Dial at least once a year when Mateo comes into the studio. That's great. Thanks for showing those off. That's awesome.
Honestly, I don't know why more manufacturers aren't embracing the Mocha Dial trend here in the U.S. I think that we would see a lot more sales. I think it would be a differentiator to the iPhone.
Huawei did at CES this year when they announced the Huawei Watch Jewel.
Don't go there.
They had Mocha Dial straps, and Alex Dobie from Android Central immediately tweeted at me saying, "They've got Mocha Dial."
you would appreciate this of all people.
Huawei Watch Mocha Dial.
Yeah. Well, there we go. Excellent. Great stuff. And now we just have some apps to take a look at. So let's do that. If you like Gmail's organization in the inbox, Google Now integration, spam protection, all that kind of stuff, but you also prefer non-Gmail accounts like Yahoo or Outlook, Gmailify is for you. It's a new feature inside Google's Gmail app that allows you to manage those accounts as if they were actually hosted on Google servers in the same way that its own Gmail service is presented. So you can do the things like, you know, the social promotions, updates, inboxes, but sync it to email addresses that are not Gmail, essentially, and kind of get some of those extra functionality pieces into your email of choice. It's pretty limited right now. It's Yahoo and Hotmail and Outlook at launch. More providers are to come. But yeah, I don't know. I've gotten pretty used to the kind of compartmentalizing that's done automatically now. So I suppose that's nice, but I don't use really anything other than Gmail.
It's interesting to see that they would do this. It's really invasive into those other accounts. I mean, it's cool that they're doing it. I think that a lot of the Google Now integrations and stuff like that are what, you know, is a great product differentiator. But, you know, the limit has been you've got to be using Gmail. So it's interesting to see them expand it out like this. Of course, I looked into it and it does not support POP3. So this won't work with my own personal email, man. But,
you know, I'm sorry, Ron. Deal with it. Yeah, so I feel your pain. No, I don't. Yep.
I do wonder what would happen if I was to plug my Yahoo email into this and if Google Now integrations were pulled from my Yahoo email, that is pretty much a spam haven. Like that's pretty much all it is hundreds, if not thousands of spam messages all the time. Like, I wonder if it would just like totally send Google Now on a wild goose chase. I know that it wouldn't, but I'm hypothesizing.
That would be fun to see.
Fun to see where Google Now would end up.
But then again, Yahoo's own Yahoo Mail app is very, very nice nowadays. Mm-hmm. It's evolved very nicely. So
yeah,
I don't see the value that this adds to Yahoo users who are using the Yahoo Mail app unless they really want the Gmail services such as Archive and
Google Now. I think that's kind of a big one, yes. Right? Like, you know, if you are a Yahoo user and you do a lot of traveling, you know, and those tickets go into your Yahoo mailbox, now those will come up, you know, dynamically in Google Now as a result. So that could at least be useful.
I mean, what you've got is you've got literally millions of people with legacy email addresses, and you know they signed up for a Yahoo account, you know, in the early 2000s, and and that's their one that they're stuck with. But they see these great kind of features if they're using an Android phone, they want Google Now, and it, you know, now you're no longer limited by that. And you know, Mateo, you're right. You know, Yahoo has done a lot of they've been working really hard to improve their apps. Unfortunately, nobody cares because Yahoo is a sinking ship. But you know, it's interesting to see Google kind of embracing them. So yeah,
all right, what's next, Ron?
Well, what's next? Well, what's next or what's yesterday?
That's a good question.
Yeah, so those of you who are really tuned into the world of social media might remember that last month there was a big splash when there was the next big social network that everyone needed to jump on, not Yellow, but it was called Peach, and it launched in January on iOS only. Much to a lot of our dismay. I think we talked a couple of weeks ago that there was a hacked kind of Android version for Peach or whatever. There was little stuff going around there. Yeah. But last week, Peach finally launched their official Android app. It's come out of beta and it's available in the Google Play Store. And it's the kind of thing where if you're looking for an alternative to the world of social networks, Peach is one you might want to check out. There are a couple of interesting differentiators in it. Basically, it allows you to post, you know, to post status updates. You can wave to other users. What the really interesting bit of functionality that the app has is something called Magic Words, which allows you to trigger different actions based off the use. So, for example, if you're in the app and you want to, if you use the magic word draw. It then allows you to doodle something after you triggered that magic word, puts up a little drawing interface where you can draw. You can, there's Jason drawing a little doodle. There it is. very good. Uh-huh. What is that? Is that a bunny? Or? All right, good. I like good work, Jason.
I take it you can change colors as well.
To our audio listeners, Jason is now drawing what looks like some sort of bunny.
if I could draw a unicorn,
I'd a banana for scale.
Okay, yellow.
That's an enormous banana.
I know it's actually very small. A tiny bunny.
It's a small bunny.
Tiny bunny.
Sorry, I almost said banani. I think I actually did say banani. A bunny. A banani is like the mashup of a banana and a bunny.
No, it's all to scale, so it's fine.
Oh, okay, yeah. Perfect.
So you can use the magic word draw to add a little doodle. You could write song to detect the song that you're listening to at that moment. You can use the magic word shout to write a word or an emoji in big letters. So it's really kind of pushing the boundaries of what other kind of social network apps have done in terms of interaction, which I think is neat and a little innovative. But like any of these social network apps, you know, you need to it's only going to work if your friends are using it and if you're actually interacting there. They have talked about adding some messaging component to it, which I think would really help it in terms of adoption. But we haven't seen that yet. You know, this is a you know, a very small startup based out of New York City. So it's, you know, it's interesting to see what they do as they continue to develop this platform and this product.
Man.
I did notice when I signed up that there are already a bunch of brands that are on it and using it, you know, so if you want to follow, you know, kind of establish, they have a very interesting who to follow account. I think Rolling Stone was on there and things like that. But when I installed it today, it looks like there's a bug when you go to try to add your contacts from your phone. The app crashes, at least for me. So I haven't been able to add any of my friends yet. So.
Wah, wah.
Yeah. What do you think of it, Jason?
Well, you know, it just burst onto the scene and then it disappeared as quickly as it burst onto the scene. I don't know if I think a whole lot about it. It's just another social network. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not going to – I don't even know where to go with it on this one.
I mean, I just think it's funny is that like all day I've been trying to add my friends, but every time I go to find contacts, it crashes. So I'm waiting for it to update before I can actually use it. At this point, I just have one person who's paying attention to what I'm saying and who I'm paying attention to what they're saying. So, yeah.
Now, I can't remember how to – draw the poop emoji, but if
oh,
I
geez,
could,
not this
I,
again.
No, sorry,
you haven't been practicing enough.
No, I haven't. And honestly, I think maybe they're protecting against it because I don't see brown in the color spectrum down there. So
there you go.
I think they know. Yeah. I think they know that my initial reaction is to try and draw the poop emoji.
They're on to you, Jason. Although I do think the magic words is really interesting. I think that's a unique thing that I haven't seen in other. And I mean, we've seen similar kind of things, but that the deep level of integration of the stuff that they've developed in terms of those magic words, are worth looking at. So
yeah, that's cool. Yeah. That's cool. I just don't have the bandwidth for another social network.
That's the tough thing. Is it a network that anybody I care to talk to will be on, and they're already on Twitter or Google Plus or Instagram or Facebook. So why do I need another? You know, much like Mateo's messaging draw and is on his phone. You know, I expand my social. It kind of reminds me of Path. Path came out and everyone's like, oh, cool, check it out. It's got a little cool stuff, but nobody was really doing anything with it. So
yep.
Yeah.
Path is big in Indonesia.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, they sold it to a Korean company, didn't they? I believe. And it's still going, but it's pretty much dead in the States. So.
It's interesting how those social networks just find their region and thrive for so long, just that way sometimes.
Well, it's what they call the Orkut model.
Right.
Remember Orkut?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Rest in peace, Orkut.
Yep. Orkut. For those who don't know or don't remember, back in the mid 2000s, Google launched Orkut as ORKUT, and it was a social network that like way proto social network, like Friendster, MySpace time period social network, and it blew up in Brazil and was huge in Brazil for like a decade until they shut it down.
So, and they didn't shut it down for a long time because of that success. Yeah.
And in Iran, all my Iranian classmates at university were. On Orkut.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting. I don't use Peach at all. It's been installed. I've been on the beta for a little while, and I get notifications every once in a while. I'm just like, God, I just don't have it in me. Ever wanted to browse the Google Play Store as if you were using a 386 PC running MS-DOS? Well, now you can.
Oh, man.
This exists.
Wait a minute. Now, this isn't actually MS-DOS. This is running the old MS-DOS shell.
It's not. You know, I'm overselling it.
Well, not
it.
Running MS-DOS, but this isn't a command prompt. This is a shell.
Yeah, no, fair enough.
Yeah.
Okay. It's retro.andro.io, and never look to the future. Instead, live in the past when you want to search the Play Store. Actually, there's information density here. That's one thing you get out of this. You get like a lot of stuff packed in, easy to scroll through the columns. In some ways, it's actually kind of useful in comparison to the alternative that has big bubbly squares and all that kind of stuff.
And it seems to be oddly responsive. So if you change the width of your window, it reaches a certain point and it just becomes icons.
Oh, okay. Nice. Not the mobile interface or something?
Must be.
That's strange. But they need to tighten that up maybe a little bit.
But yes, it's a.
But they didn't have mobile responsive design when there were MS-DOS shell apps.
On 386, I was surprised there was color screens. I was using grayscale screens at the time.
Yeah, fair enough.
I miss those blue background shells, like the old MS-DOS shell and like all the Norton Disk Utilities and stuff like that with those blue backgrounds. Those were the days. So, yeah.
I take it you don't use PowerShell on Windows. Ron.
Well, I don't use Windows anymore, so.
So you'd be right. Yeah. All right. Hey, what do you think? Should we battle a little bit in the arena? In the arena?
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
Okay, we should first and foremost, check in on last week's. I have not seen the results.
I have.
I've been hiding from the results.
You got to use the Bitly link, not the AAA poll.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Remember? Oh, dang it. Yep. By the way, AAA poll link is back, so we're good there. But, you're right. Cool. So last week's was bit.ly/AAA253. And let's see here. Telegram. Oh, Ron, of course. Well, of course. Telegram wins with 54% of the vote.
That was an emotional roller coaster in the span of about 5 seconds. There, Jason.
You're just winning a lot, Ron.
It's a well-deserved win.
Yeah. No, it's a great app.
According to Wade County in the chat room, through 7 weeks of the arena so far, Jason and Flo are tied with one for third place. The guests are in second with two wins, and I am in first with three wins. So there you go.
Good for you, Ron.
I started off strong last year, so yeah. We all know how that would happen then. So,
that's true. Yeah. That's a really good point. You could totally fall on your face again. We'll see how it goes. Okay, so that means I'm the returning loser. So therefore, I will go ahead and do it. And this is actually a pretty easy one to show off because it's just a lot of fun. It's called Alto's Adventure. This was a game, I believe it was released on iOS sometime last year. And it was one of those, every once in a while a game is released on iOS and I see the kind of the gameplay and I'm like, I really want that for Android. I hope that comes to Android soon. And it finally did. So basically, what is it? It's a game where you are this snowboarder guy. Let me turn up the audio. There you go. And you're trying to save the llamas that are climbing down the hill. You get little obstacles as well as coins that you want to pick up, right? If I tap the button when there's an obstacle, I do a little jump. It's got a nice... One thing I really like about this game is its use of sound design. This is one of those kind of games that you want to throw headphones on and play through. But you just kind of basically try and go as far as you can, jump at the right points. I'm not really doing any tricks right now because I'm trying to talk and play, but you can do tricks, and if you successfully land them... Here, I'll see if I can do one. Nope, that wasn't one. Okay, that works. Now, as I continue to do these tricks, I'm going to do a flip. Well, if I had landed that, my scarf gets longer, so over time your scarf kind of grows out, and that's like an element of, you know, just... trying to do awesome and make it grow out larger, I suppose. But you have different challenges on all the levels. Replay value is really, I think it's really good. But yeah, just good kind of design from a graphical standpoint and also just from a sound design standpoint. I love that kind of stuff in games. And it's a really good one to just throw headphones on and get lost in. And yeah, it's a lot of fun. See, I'm saving llamas. So it's called Alto's Adventure. And it is free, I believe. I can't remember if I paid for this one or not. But I believe it's free. So there you go. And, I mean, we could watch me play it all day if you guys want. You want to watch me play it all day?
Sure. Why not?
I don't believe you, Ron. All right. We'll go ahead and turn it off.
What did you do to poor Bambi?
I know. Well, you know, it's too bad that it's too bad they weren't goats running away from me. Mateo, you are up. What you got?
So, my app for Team G&G, that's Team Gina and Guests, is the RBS Six Nations Championship app. So, for those of you who aren't aware of it, this is the time of year that rugby in Europe gets big because there's a competition called the Six Nations. Six of the oldest nations playing rugby play it all out in a competition to find out who's the best, and the worst battle it out for the wooden spoon, which is the thing you don't want because it means you came in last. So this app allows you to follow matches, both live and follow the news throughout the week of what's going on with all the different national teams, England, France, Wales, Ireland, Scotland, and Italy. And as well as following the news, you can integrate their Twitter engine, so you can follow the squads and people tweeting about games and then retweet from there or engage with them from the app itself. So it has a mini Twitter client that will redirect you to the native one if you want to interact with it. But it's good to follow the chatter of what's happening. And then you can follow specific teams and find out what's happening or find out what the squad lineout is. I particularly like the design of this because it's not material design, but it has its own design language, and it's a good one to keep up to date with the RBS Six Nations and the rugby. It's free in the Google Play Store, and I would recommend it if you're wanting to find out more about what's happening in the Six Nations rugby competition.
Wooden spoon. That just sounds like a slap in the face.
It does, in a way. But if you're used to supporting two teams such as Scotland and Italy, as I am, you're all too used to having a wooden spoon.
You're too familiar with it.
A few years ago, I was lucky enough to be able to go to the French consulate in Edinburgh and drop a wooden spoon through their letterbox after a particularly good rugby weekend. But yes, the wooden spoon, not too good. and it's all going to be played for in the Scotland v Italy game later this month, or sorry, next month. But the RBS Six Nations app, it's available for Android in the Google Play Store. It's free, and lots of interesting reading to be done in there.
Excellent. All right, so it's RBS Six Nations Championship app. Check that out. And then finally, Ron, you have your app, and because you are remote, you're going to try the Screen Meet demo.
I am currently streaming my phone to Brian right now via the Screen Meet link, and I don't know if Brian has pulled it up successfully or not, but it is there. So there it is. So you're looking at my phone. My app for this week is called Secret Flix. Secret Flix codes for Netflix. And if any of you are like me, you are a Netflix user, and as you've used Netflix every now and then, let's just say the search experience on Netflix isn't so great. I find that Netflix tends to recommend a lot of the same things over and over again, but every now and then you see this random bizarre category of movie get thrown at you, and you're like, oh wow, that's really interesting, you know, where it's like, you know, realistic documentaries of the 1940s or something like that, you know, and then sometimes it appears and then you can't get it again, you can't find it. This has been in the news recently. Actually, Netflix has over 3,000 categories of how they organize their movies. And you can't access all those categories through the app for some reason. It's very bizarre. So what Secret Flix allows you to do is that you're able to search through those genres and these categories and find movies in a different through a different way. So here, what we've got, and I'll go through the little onboarding thing so you can see how it works. Basically what happens is that you scroll through the Secret Flix app and you select a category from the list. Then what it's going to do is it's going to trigger you to open that link, and you want to open it in Chrome. Okay. So you always want to open it in your browser. Do not open it in the next Netflix app. Then what it will do is it will load a specific URL that goes to that category in Netflix and shows you all the movies that are available. When you find the movie you want, you tap on it. And then you open up the Netflix app and you can start watching the movie, and you can Chromecast it or do whatever, or, you know, however else you want to watch it. So for here, we're going to leave the little demo. We're going to find something. So the standard list is their standard list of categories. And then the extended is the one that actually goes through all 3,000 of the wacky kind of crazy ones. Just to be real basic, I'm just going to search. Let's look for baseball, right? Because I like baseball. And there we go. We see baseball movies. So I'm going to tap baseball movies. And then I'm going to say open it with Chrome, all right? So I'm going to say always so that my phone remembers it. And it will now load on Netflix the specific URL for baseball movies. And you can change – now this is the Netflix website. This isn't the app. So I can change whether to be sorted by my suggestions or highest rated or year released or alphabetical. But so, you know, here I'm looking, and, you know, and you can look at all the various baseball movies, which is awesome. And then, you know, let's say, okay, I want to watch A League of Their Own. I just tap that, and it gives me the little explanation, and I say play, and it loads Netflix. And boom, now I'm watching now I'm watching A League of Their Own. Once it loads, your bandwidth may vary. So there it is.
Categories that are basically hidden. Yeah, because you notice them pop up all the time. And then they're gone.
So, going back to the app, my phone really wants to play Netflix. Close Netflix.
It really wants you to watch League of Their Own.
It really does. It really, really does. Okay, so.
Maybe we'll find out what this baseball you talk of is.
Yeah, maybe.
Is this baseball?
So now what's great, though, is that you can, like, you can find these random categories, like they have imaginative children and family movies from the 1980s. Like, that's a category.
Right? All right. Is the Princess Bride in there?
Yeah, probably. Imaginative movies based on children's books. Like, there's a whole – they've got this stuff broken down. Imaginative movies for ages 2 to 4, 5 to 7. So if you have kids, this could be a great way to find some gems of movies that they want to watch. Also, they've got all these categories broken out a lot by decades. So if you want to find, like, a movie from the 50s or 60s, which sometimes I get on that kind of, like, old movie kick, this is a great way to find them. You can just type in, like, if I want to just find any 1950s movies – right? It's going to give me critically acclaimed French movies from the 1950s. Cult sci-fi fantasy from the 1950s. Like dark dramas from the 1950s. They've got some crazy genres on Netflix, which are awesome. So I'm into superheroes. So we can type in super and we can get goofy comic book and superhero movies, irreverent comic book and superhero movies, quirky, suspenseful comic book and superhero movies. Like it's, they've got a great, you know, like they've done all this work on tagging and categorizing their movies. Why they don't open this up to everybody is beyond me. But with Secret Flicks, now you can access this stuff. So it's free in the Google Play Store. There is an ad at the bottom of the app, but it's not that intrusive. Just ignore, you know, like let them get their cut. And access the treasure trove of movies on Netflix.
Nice.
There you go.
That's awesome. It's kind of like, suddenly I'm blanking with the burger place here that has like the secret menu. In-N-Out. In-N-Out, yes. You go to In-N-Out, they have like this whole secret menu that you only know about if you know about it.
I just love the
Why
really
has no one
long...
told me of this?
You don't know about the secret menu in In-N-Out, Mateo? Oh man, we got to fill you in on that. There's a whole, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So you feel special when you figure it out.
We had our first In-N-Out burger the other day in Arizona.
Oh, what'd you think?
We approve.
We approve. That's what I thought you might think.
So, Mateo, what you want to do is you want to go to In-N-Out and order fries animal style and then let that blow your mind. So
I just get my burger animal style.
I'll just put that to Google Keep.
I get the burger animal style too, but the fries animal style is the best. Oh, it's got melted cheese, grilled onions. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's a little messy, but it's very delicious. Yeah. I'm hungry.
My better half is looking quite excited at the moment.
She's taking notes. She's like, animal style. French fries, in and out. After I talked up AAApoll.com, I can get it to load this time. But when I go to shorten the URL, it does absolutely nothing. So instead, again, we're going to rely on our old trusty friend, the bit.ly/AAA254. Sorry, Brian. bit.ly/AAA254. Place your vote for your favorite app this week. Is it Alto's Adventure, Secret Flicks Codes for Netflix, or RBS Six Nations Championship app? And, place your vote. Let us know what you think. We'll check back in next week and see by how much Ron or guest is beating me.
Team GNG for the win.
Yes. We'll see. One of you guys is going to beat me, probably. All right. We have anything else? Is that it?
We kind of, yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well, I think this has been a fantastic time. And Mateo, so happy you let us know that you were going to be in town. And thanks for stopping by.
Oh, thanks for having me back on the show.
Yes.
It's been great fun.
Tell people kind of what you want them to know, where they can find what you do, or I don't know.
Well, a couple of plugs. Yeah. Apart from my day job working for Skyscanner on defect process management, I'm also now helping organize a conference called March of the Droids.
Mm, nice.
So this is a UK community event. It's not developer focused, though this year there will be a couple of developer tracks. Tickets are still available for sale. And I'll give you a quick exclusive. This year we have involvement from Cyanogen, who we were speaking about earlier. This is probably the longest segue ever in all about Android history. We started off with Cyanogen in the news. And now we're closing off with them. So they'll be present at March of the Droids.
That's great.
There will be more announced very shortly through a very close media partner who you're all friends with.
Okay.
And then the conference itself is on the 19th of March. We're holding a code kitchen in partnership with IDEA. So Aaron Kasten and the IDEA group.
The folks behind Big Android Barbecue.
So they're flying over to Edinburgh for the event.
Nice.
And then the week after that, I'm talking at DroidCon Dubai. So it's a developer-focused conference in Dubai.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be talking about tests for both web and Android native apps at Skyscanner and how things have changed in the last year.
Nice. So cool. You've got a lot on your plate.
Yes, and when I do have free time,
I
review phones like the Honor 5X on coolsmartphone.com.
There you go. Check it out. That's awesome. You're reviewing phones. What I love is that you're reviewing phones, at least from my perspective, phones that we just don't see a whole lot. You know what I mean? And you're getting access to those devices and reviewing them. So thank you for doing that. That's awesome. Thanks for coming on.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We'll have you back, and maybe there will be a new like Goat Simulator that'll release by that time.
Yes,
we'll keep a reserve for you.
I hear Goat Simulator Payday is now available, so Brian and Padre will be reviewing that soon.
Oh yes,
this is actually a real thing that exists, isn't it?
Yes, it's a like Grand Theft Auto with goats.
Oh boy, Ron, what about you?
I would like to state for the record that I did not bring up Goat Simulator once during the show, and that it was you guys who brought it up. I'm just saying. So there you go.
it's difficult not to at least once. I'm happy to take the fall this time.
Exactly. Yeah, but I'm bummed I missed you, Mateo. Hopefully I'll catch you next time you're in town. I'm sorry I missed. Wasn't there in person. But in the meantime, you can go to about.me/RonXO where you can follow all my social media stuff on Google+ and Twitter and Instagram and all that fun stuff. If you like the sound of my voice and the things I talk about, you can go hear me on iFanboy at iFanboy.com. Every week on Sundays, we release our Pick of the Week podcast where we talk about the week's comic books. And then also check out GoodfellowsMinute.com where we're analyzing the movie Goodfellas minute by minute. And we're almost over. We're in the home stretch. But you can go back and start at the beginning. It is evergreen content that will be there forever. So
once you're done with the podcast entirely, do you think you're ever going to go back and watch Goodfellas again?
Oh, absolutely. That's the thing. Like I was just saying to the guys I do the podcast with, like, you know, 112 episodes in, I still love every minute of this movie.
Yeah.
The Tony Bennett song Rags to Riches that we used for our opening theme song in every episode, that I'm a little tired of. but the movie I'm cool with. So.
Right on. That's awesome. Thanks, Ron. Brian, what about you?
Well, when I'm not doing this show, I've got Know How with Padre, like Mateo mentioned. We will soon be reviewing Goat Simulator Payday, so forward to that. We've also got Raspberry Pi Security Cam coming up, a gaming PC review, Chromebook versus Windows. So a lot of stuff coming up on Know How soon, so definitely check that out. And you can also follow me at @cranky_hippo.
How many times can the Goat Simulator people return to that well? I mean, at some point, you've done all the Goat Simulator things you can do, right?
Well, or this one differentiates. You have flamingos as well. So.
Okay, does this exist on Android yet? Or?
Not yet, but I'm sure there will be an Android version.
Probably
soon.
By the next time you're on, I'm sure it'll exist on Android. We'll make sure that it's reserved for you, okay?
Thank you.
All right, we'll reserve a space for you both at the table and in the arena. As for me, about.me/JasonHowell, yellowgoldmusic.com for my music. I'm actually working on new stuff. I got rid of Comcast TV, and it turns out like I'm like super productive now. So I'm totally working on new material. It's awesome. I love it. I'm totally inspired. So hopefully I'll have things to put up on the site. I'm batting around a few ideas right now, you know, when I find free time. But yellowgoldmusic.com if you want to check in on that. As for this show, thank you so much for watching. We hope you'll come back next week and watch once again and can continue on throughout the course of history. Voicemail, 347-SHOW-AAA. Email, AAA@twit.tv. You can find the show on Twitter. We are @AndroidShow. We have a subreddit at twitaaa.reddit.com. We have all our show notes and past episodes, twit.tv/AAA. You can find every link to every show that we talk about posted on the episode pages. So look for that. Find our shows on YouTube, iTunes, podcast catchers all across the board. And you can catch us live every Tuesday starting around 5-ish, 5:30 p.m. Pacific, twit.tv/live. That is it for this week. See you next week on another episode of All About Android. See y'all. Bye.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye. See you next week, Flo.
Bye.
Falsetto.